Today is Wednesday, the May 23rd, the year 2001. We're in East Lansing, Michigan. I am Jeff Charnley, interviewing Dr. Cecil Mackey for the MSU Oral History Project. The sesquicentennial of the university will be coming up in the year 2005. Dr. Mackey served as president of Michigan State University from 1978 until 1985. As you can see, Dr. Mackey, we're tape recording. Do you give us permission to record this interview?
Indeed, I do. But one correction, it was 1979.
1979, excuse me.
That's fine.
I'd like to start first with this morning with some questions about your educational and professional background before you came to Michigan State. Where were you born and raised, and where did you go to college?
I was born and grew up in Montgomery, Alabama. Started college, graduated from Sidney Lanier High School in Montgomery. Started college at Georgia Tech in the summer of 1945, just before the war ended. I went there for three semesters and then transferred to the University of Alabama. Graduated from there in, it was March of 1949. Subsequently got a master's. My degree was in economics, my master's was in economics. Went to the University of Illinois for doctoral study. PhD in 1955. I began the study of law on a part-time basis after I got my PhD. Went to the University of Alabama Law School in the summer of 55. Taught for a year at Illinois and went to law school while I was there. Did some Air Force duty on the faculty of the Air Force Academy in Denver. And then while I was there, I went to law school at the University of Denver. When I got out of the Air Force, I'd accumulated just enough leave time to have some money, and it matched the length of time I needed to finish law school, so I went back to Alabama, got a law degree there, and then went to Harvard for a year of graduate study in law. Taught law at Alabama, and from there went to Washington, served in Washington during the Kennedy and Johnson administrations, first as Assistant Secretary to the Senate Antitrust Subcommittee. From there moved to the Federal Aviation Agency as Director of the Office of Policy Development. From there to the Department of Commerce as Director of the Office of Transportation Policy, and was a part of the project that led to the creation of the Department of Transportation. My boss became the first secretary of the new Department of Transportation, and President Johnson appointed me as Assistant Secretary for Policy Development. I served in that job till the change of administration, when Richard Nixon beat Hubert Humphrey. There was a significant turnover. The Republicans fired all of the Democratic presidential appointees in very short order. I went from Washington then to Florida State as Executive Vice President, actually a brief stint as Administrative Vice President, then Executive Vice President. And in 1971, went to the University of South Florida as President, stayed there for a little less than 6 years. Then moved to Texas Tech as president, was there for 3 years, and from there to Michigan State in August of 1979, and I've been at Michigan State since.
What attracted you to study of economics originally?
Main attraction was one of the faculty members I had who was a teacher, a man named Paul Paustian, P-A-U-S-T-I-A-N. He was one of the two most interesting professors I had at the University of Alabama. And the other one was a man named Frierson, who taught Victorian poetry. Mm. And I thought of majoring in English right up until near the end of my senior year, and then decided I wasn't sure what English majors would do, so I switched and majored in economics and continued with it. But Paustian was interested in things that I thought were interesting. And the way he taught his classes, the kinds of questions he posed, the kinds of things he had done, all struck me as being interesting, and he encouraged me, and so I went into economics.
The well, how about law? How did you first get interested in that?
Well, I'd originally thought when I transferred from Georgia Tech to Alabama that I might want to go to law school. Turned out I went on to graduate school in economics instead, but I never really got rid of the idea of law school. The areas of economics that interested me most seemed to be related to law. A man named Horace Gray at the University of Illinois was a faculty member who was interested in institutional economics. He and Walter Adams were good friends and collaborators. And when I'd finished my degree and the University of Illinois asked me to stay for a year and teach, I told him I thought I might be interested in law school. And there was hardly anybody who encouraged that kind of study, that just something that wasn't done at that time. But Professor Gray said, I think you ought to go ahead and study law. He says, very few economists know law, and no lawyers know economics. So you might give it a try. And with that, a man named John Cribbett, who was on the faculty at the University of Illinois, was also encouraging. He later became the chancellor of the Champaign-Urbana campus. He and I served on the Council of 10 of the presidents of Big Ten institutions together, but he was very supportive and encouraging and helped foster my career in law.
Had you met Walter Adams before you came to Michigan State?
Yes, I'd met him when I worked in Washington. Mm-hmm. He came and testified and consulted with some of the people that I worked with, mainly people on the Small Business Committee of the Senate. But I'd known him, not well, but knew him by reputation, knew his philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Government service, how did you... You said you served in the Air Force for a time?
Yes.
Was that in a regular commission, or was it a...
I had an ROTC commission.
I see.
My active duty was delayed so I could finish graduate school. And by an odd stroke of good fortune for me, I got an assignment to the faculty of the Air Force Academy when it was in its very earliest stages of development. And so I spent my tour of duty as an Air Force officer at the Academy, helping to develop the curriculum for the new Academy, still in its temporary quarters in Denver. It hadn't moved to its current site.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what courses did you teach?
We didn't really get to teaching. I got out before I had responsibility for developing most of the courses. I was the only PhD. There were four officers there, one major and two captains. One of them had a master's in economics and had taught at a small private school in the Midwest. The others two had MBAs. They'd been sent to school by the military.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the only one who had, I was the youngest, the newest and all, but I was the only one who had any background in economic theory to amount to anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we developed, there were three courses in the curriculum. One was the basic introductory economics course, one was comparative economic systems, and then one was to be the economics of national security.
So you were a lieutenant at the time?
I was the first lieutenant,
mm-hmm.
The youngest one. The man who was the dean of the faculty, a man named Robert McDermott, had been the chair of the economics department and then had become dean of the faculty. And he did something that was sort of unusual for the military. He gave me the academic rank of associate professor, and I had a major who was assigned to help me. And there weren't many first lieutenants who had, I couldn't call him an assistant, but he was there working with me. And mm-hmm. so I enjoyed that part of my military career.
You were a doctor lieutenant.
Yes. We got one other PhD and a young lieutenant who was a flight officer later, but when I first got there, I was the only one.
Mm-hmm. What... your time in Washington, how would you describe your experiences?
Interesting, exciting, demanding. convinced me that if you wanted to be in public policy in any way, that was the place to be.
Was there anything in your training or background that prepared you for your government service well?
Nothing directly, but in a sense, it seemed the ideal place for the combination of economics and law, because they tend to come together in both the governmental and the legislative processes. And so I enjoyed having a chance to work in fields that were related to what I'd studied and taught, but there weren't many courses that prepared you for being an investigative lawyer on the antitrust subcommittee.
Do you feel that your service helped prepare you for university administration?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Now, one of the reasons I left teaching to go to Washington was that as a young faculty member, I was curious about the situation that I found myself in with limited experience in the real world that I was teaching about. I taught antitrust law, I taught corporation law, and some other things. And I had never been working either in a law firm or in a corporation, and so when the chance came to go to Washington and be involved in the activities of government in areas I was interested in, that was very appealing, and it gave me some of the background and some of the experience that, well, it really allowed me to feel a lot more confident about what I wanted to do as an academician when I got back in the classroom, back on the university campus.
Mm-hmm. How was it that you first heard about the Michigan State opening after Dr. Horton left?
I was at home one night and I got a call from a man I'd never heard of. And he said he was calling on behalf of the Board of Regents, Board of Trustees of Michigan State, and wanted to know if I'd be interested in talking with him.
Who was that called you? Do you remember that? Was it one of the board members?
It was a former board member.
Okay. Warren Huff?
Warren Huff, yes. Mm-hmm. Warren Huff. And we became good friends and saw a lot of one another in the years that followed.
Mm-hmm. When you first arrived, how would you say the general mood on campus was? Or what do you remember about your first experiences at Michigan State?
Hard to put a point in time as being my arrival time, because once the board had met and approved my appointment, I stayed in Texas for a while, but I came here quite frequently and stayed for several days at a time over a period of the summer. Mm-hmm. I actually came here in, I think it was August the 4th of 79, but I had been coming here, meeting with people, with the deans, the non-academic administrators, people like that. And so I'd gotten to know a lot about the university before I actually moved here, and my appointment was effective. It was in the summer, so you got a very different impression of a university in the summer than you might in the fall. Any place that has been without permanent leadership for 22 months, which I think was the length of time they had been without a permanent president here, there's a lot that's unsettled and uncertain. There had not been particularly strong or favorable financial support for the institution. There were a number of issues that the board was concerned about that they had mentioned in the recruiting process. And so I just found a situation where there was a lot to learn, a lot to set about doing. But there was no great unrest. There wasn't significant student unrest. There were not major faculty issues that I recall, but just a lot of work that needed to be done.
Mm-hmm. What attracted you to the job originally?
Michigan State, obviously a university with compelling reputation. You know, I think most people in higher education know all the good universities. They know where they are. And if you're going to be an administrator, you probably have some desire to work in an AAU-type institution, one of the major research universities of the country. It was a place where the board wanted a president to work with them, to deal with the issues that confronted the institution. It was an institution where it seemed to me it would make a difference who the president was. I had some concurrent conversations with the with members of the board of another institution, which was also a very fine institution. But one of my reactions to it was that it was going to make a lot less difference who was president there. The president would have less opportunity and less ability to have a personal impact. And if you're going to do that kind of a job, it seems that you might as well do it where it makes a difference that it's you instead of somebody else who's there.
Mm-hmm. The economic issues that you mentioned affected the university, the general downturn in the economy. Yeah.
It came fairly soon after I got here, but it was not obvious that the financial crisis that materialized was in the offing at the time that I was talking with the board and when I got here. But it was quite soon after that the full impact of it became apparent.
Mm-hmm. That relationship between the university and the legislature or the governor, obviously you were pulled into that. Would you talk a little bit about relationship with the legislature?
Well, I enjoyed what I thought was a good personal relationship with most of the legislators. There were a few exceptions to that, but by and large, I got along well with them personally. I worked at it. I spent time with legislators individually, with the chairs of the various committees. Legislators find it a little difficult to feel totally at ease with administrators who are involved in fairly intense controversy. So if you've got some major issues on your campus, and it's very easy for the people who have grievances or feel that they have issues they'd like resolved by outside forces to get to the legislature, mm-hmm. and the legislature tends to hear those and respond, and that certainly complicates the job. And we had enough problems on this campus with budget and other things that there were people who were talking to the legislature about a lot of matters. And, you know, some of them more sympathetic than others when they deal with the president after you've had those mm-hmm. questions about historical discrimination on the basis of one thing or another, with allocation of funds. People wanted funds reallocated so they'd take their grievances to the legislature. The decisions that the administration and the board had to make affected some people rather severely, and they were looking for ways to get those problems solved through their individual contacts with legislators. But, you know, even with all that, there were a number of people I had quite good relationships with, one or two that I'd usually send somebody else to talk to because it was more productive. And, uh-huh. My staff and I had a pretty good understanding of that. If we figured out that one of us had a better relationship with somebody than another one, you know, that was the person who'd mm-hmm. have most of the contact.
How about Nicholas Jacobetti? What was his attitude toward Michigan State? Was he a tough sell?
Oh, Jake was a person who had his own agenda. He was accustomed to acting as he wished. His main interests were in northern Michigan, and he didn't ever go out of his way to make life easy for anybody that was not one of his favored people, and MSU was not a special event interest of his. He did have a good relationship with Jack Breslin. He liked Jack. They had worked together. And that relationship was helpful to Michigan State mm-hmm. some of the time. When
and he was in charge of legislative contact?
Generally, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was our principal contact with the legislature.
The some of the other issues that came up during your administration, some of the women's issues, diversity issues, would you talk a little bit about that?
Well, let's see. I had been concerned with women's issues from the earliest days of my experience in university administration. At University of South Florida had done some things that I don't think had been done anywhere else in trying to get equality for women in terms of salary, promotion, tenure, and other things like that. I'd continued those interests at Texas Tech and here. When I first got here, I had to hire two vice presidents, and one was Connie Stewart, the first female vice president we had had, and the other was Moses Turner, the first African-American vice president that Michigan State had had. And I did a number of other things, some on my own initiative, some in response to proposals from others to try to advance the causes of hiring and recognition of the accomplishments of people in minority groups, particularly interests of women as well. We had some issues with HEW. A couple of times I found myself siding with the women on campus against HEW. Some interesting issues, well, I guess from a distance you kind of get a laugh out of them, but the women wanted to be able to keep a separate closed opportunity for swimming, and HEW wanted us to break down the barriers so that the women, so that men could swim in the same time, the same hour, same location that the women did. And we went round and round with them, and I preserved the right for the women. The HEW folks came in, and we had a big hassle over it, and they finally ended up saying, okay, we'll let you do that. Not the largest issue you ever deal with, but one that one you do remember. We had some male faculty members who I think more as a matter of spite or as a joke were trying to go after the places where women had had preserved some niche for themselves. The Faculty Wives Club had changed its name to the Faculty Folk because we had one or two male members who said they wanted to join, and you know, it was more a farce than anything, but that happened in a number of places on campus.
There was a women's lounge in the union too?
Yeah.
Was the board supportive of you in these efforts?
Yes, on things like that, we had some very, very active and very concerned female members of the board. Virtually all the male members of the board were very supportive of doing things for female faculty members, staff members, students, and all. Same with minority. We had two minority members, two African-American board members when I came. And all the other members were generally supportive. The board tended to slant or tilt toward the, I guess some of the alumni would say, toward the liberal side considerably. And that generally seemed to favor most of these issues and cause them to be supportive.
Mm-hmm. Was Joel Ferguson on the board at that time?
No.
Blanche Martin was.
Blanche Martin, okay. Aubrey Radcliffe. Mm-hmm.
The some of the academics and athletics issues that came up. Why don't we talk about athletics, football? The some of the issue. How does Big Ten sports intrude on the academic process?
Well, that's an issue that I was outspoken on most of my time as a university administrator. And my own personal opinions never gained wide popular support among major university presidents. In the Big Ten, there were maybe one and a half other commitments to some of what I was advocating. In the Ivy League, I think there was one, there may have been two presidents who were generally inclined to my views on athletics. It seemed to me that the NCAA was an invention of the universities that had come to have an undue and unfortunate influence on the universities. We created a monster. It's of our own making. And now we're its victims in many ways. And through its efforts to control the athletes, keep a monopoly over the labor force, they do things which aren't in the student interest. And in trying to do that, they create a lot of other issues that that seem to be virtually insoluble if you grant them all of the assumptions or the hypotheses from which they want to operate. Mm-hmm. But I was in favor of some compensation to athletes, in favor of much more realistic recognition of what universities do when they recruit the elite athletes who are poorly prepared for the academic work of the universities. And it's more coincidence than plan that you have the association of big-time athletics with universities in this country. It doesn't exist in most other countries, maybe any other of the developed countries in the world. And if you decide you're going to keep athletics here and you want the elite athletes, then you ought to admit what you're doing instead of doing things to jerry-rig admission processes and advisory processes and all that. And the great majority of people who have responsibility for this don't want to do it, don't want to face the realities of it. Mm-hmm. And they'd like it to function with less bad publicity but not have to do anything to fix the underlying problems.
The athletic director, I know Dr. Horton, had some difficulties with the athletic director and the oversight, and perhaps lack of it. Your athletic directors, or those under your tenure, could you talk a little bit about them?
One who was here when I came left fairly soon after. I gather from what I've heard indirectly, he made some statements or offered some interpretations about my desire to have him leave, which is absolutely untrue. But Joe Kearney left here, as Darryl Rogers' football coach left, and they both left on the basis of their own decisions, their own careers. No pressure from me. Actually, when Darryl Rogers left, he went to another university and violated all the rules and customs, as best we could tell, of recruiting. Mm-hmm. And I ended up having to call the president of his university, telling him that we couldn't put up with that and would appreciate if he'd get it fixed. Otherwise, we'd probably have to take some legal action against him. And that seemed to end it, but he left to go to a situation which was much more attractive to him financially. Mm-hmm. But I was very happy with him as our football coach. Mm-hmm. Didn't think much of that practice, but when he was trying to recruit people who had been recruiting here. Mm-hmm. But other than that, both Darryl and Joe were fine as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. Hired Doug Weaver as the athletic director, and Doug and I had what I think we both would say was a very good working and personal relationship the whole time he was here. He hired Muddy Waters. It was on his recommendation. He got into some trouble with some of the alumni who had their own agenda for that, but I thought it was his role. And he decided, with a little help and advice, when it was time to fire Muddy, and he did that as well. And then he recruited Perlis, and I was supportive of that appointment. Mm-hmm. So I had what I always thought was a fair amount of involvement. I was interested in the issues of athletics, and not all presidents are, I guess.
Was there anything that you did in terms of curriculum or academics that happened under your tenure, either that foreshadowed what came later?
Well, the greatest single involvement with that was when we had to take a look at what to do with the university's programs as a result of the budget cuts. We had Lee Winder, our provost, was a principal administrative officer in charge of that reexamination. But we had to look at what we were going to support, what we were going to cut, what we were going to eliminate, and the philosophical question of how we were going to allocate resources. And I had a blue ribbon type committee of senior distinguished faculty for advisors who looked at everything in the university and reviewed all the programs and all made some recommendations. There was strong sentiment within some of the faculty elements for across the board allocation of resources, and I was absolutely convinced that that would be just a ticket to mediocrity. And so the issue, which went to the board as a philosophical and an operational question,